Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Baby on the Brain, The Returners, a podcast brought to you by Stylist, dedicated to the big life questions you face when you're a new parent navigating a return to work. My name is Fliss, I'm the Digital Content Director at Stylist, and I returned to work last year after a 10-month break on maternity leave. Every week I'm joined by a different co-host, and today I'd like to introduce Becky Vieira. Author and motherhood influencer, Becky has written a brutally honest guide to the first year of motherhood, Enough About the Baby. Together, we're here today to talk about the mental health of mothers returning to work after maternity leave. Becky, welcome. Hi, and thank you for joining us from California.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
It's a pleasure. So I thought I would kick off with some really stark stats I read last week. Research of new mums returning to work found that 94% felt nervous about their return. That's no surprise to me. I returned last year myself, and there's loads to be nervous about, right?
Exactly.
But when that's broken down into the concerns that these mothers had, I was genuinely shocked when I read what was written down. So the top five concerns from these mothers who were interviewed and they're returning to work. This is all about their concerns with the return to work. Number one is not spending enough time with their children. Number two is feeling left out of the loop in the workplace. Number three is not wanting to be away from home. Number four is nervousness during work. And number five is unexpected team changes. That doesn't leave a lot of space for you. Kindness to yourself, your mental health, that's every facet of your life worrying or having a low-key concern about work, personal life, your kids, the guilt, etc. It doesn't feel like a particularly safe space for a woman who's been through a monumental life change to find herself, does it?
A huge, huge life change. No, it becomes that push-pull. If when you're home, you're worrying about work, when you're at work, you're worrying about your child, and finding a balance for me has I've yet to be possible. So
yeah,
it's like you said, it's every aspect of our lives. And then you add on work and it's just another great weight upon us.
I think the phrase my friends and I talk about the most is the very visual cup, whether your cup is full or how empty actually usually our cup is. And when your cup is empty, how little I can actually deal with. One minor inconvenience can really set me off.
Right.
And that's when I know that my mental health isn't in a good place. But equally, I'm not good with self-care in many ways. I have to really push myself to prioritize myself. My husband finds it very easy to book a round of golf and go out and play golf. I don't really have a hobby.
Yeah.
Like I moved out of London when in the middle of the pandemic at 20 weeks pregnant, having not told anyone I was pregnant, just as an FYI. That was a nice surprise for my family. And so everything I did know, I'd been there for well over a decade. So all the hobbies I had, all the friendship circles I had, I was suddenly plunged into being vulnerable,
right,
in the eyes of health and in a pandemic in a town. I wasn't even in a city, in a town I didn't know. So I haven't really developed any hobbies or anything.
Right.
So I don't know about you, but it's really hard to know how to put yourself first when actually everything has been so demanding on you of other people. Work takes priority because when you're there, it demands all
you
of your brain space.
Right.
You leave work, exactly. But then you leave work and you've got a tiny person, Amber. If she is without a snack for at least half an hour, something's gone wrong and she will tell me about it. Like there are so many things that demand my brain space that my mental health is not top of the list.
Right. Right. And that's the case, I think, for so many moms. And that was where I found myself kind of wondering, looking around and thinking, how does anyone do this? Because I can't.
Yeah.
And I found myself often thinking that I was a bad mom. I was a failure. I wasn't set out to do this because I couldn't find that balance. I couldn't find time for myself, time for my relationships, for work. I felt like something was always losing. That something wasn't getting all of me. And it takes a long time to come to the realization that you can't give all to everything. Something's got to give.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases with moms, we're so conditioned to take care of everyone else that it's ourselves that is that point that gives. And it's really something we have to consciously work against. And every day, it's really hard. It is really hard. But like you said, putting ourselves first, valuing our mental health. The only way that I found that I could do it, the best way that I found I could do it, was just remembering that my child is best set up for success with a happy and healthy mom. And when my mental health was failing, it wasn't good for any of us. And so while I continued to deplete myself, thinking I was somehow being a better mother and this superhuman, it wasn't helping anyone at all. So I try to remind myself, if I can't do it for myself, at least do it for him. But it's a constant struggle. And I don't think it'll ever change. I think the degrees of severity change and hopefully get better. But it's 6+ years later, it's something I still work on.
Yeah, 100%. Actually, what you just said reminded me of a conversation I had earlier this series with Atanuke Awa and Candice Brathwaite. And they are both seasoned mums, is what I would call them. And they know their shit. And they sat there and said, I go on holiday. I have 7 days a year where I go away. I leave the country. I go and have a holiday. And at the time, my eyes fell out of my head because I couldn't imagine. And that was only February this year. I couldn't imagine leaving Amber because she's a real mummy girl. And the idea of her being upset at me not being there stops me doing things that I know would be good because they'd be good for her as much for me, because I would come back actually wanting to do the 10th puzzle in a row or to go out on the scooter in the rain, you know, all of those things. I know it's so important. I want to talk to you about what really pushed you to write Enough About the Baby, because it's a really interesting concept for me. Talk to me a bit more about it.
Yes. My approach since writing this book, and it's really everything I wish I had known before I became a mother, because as prepared as I was, I'd read the books, we'd taken classes, I'd spoken to friends. I liken it to almost learning how to swim by reading books. And you can practice your strokes on the living room floor, but it's not going to make a difference until you're actually immersed in the water and swimming. And that's how it was when my son was born. And there's a lot of general things I knew, but so many things also I think that people don't talk about. And all those unknowns, really for me, because I was struggling with my mental health, just compounded that. And again, like I said earlier, I felt I'm terrible at this. I'm failing. No one's talking about that their husband or partner is driving them crazy. I mean, my husband, I wanted to send him out with the trash many times. So many things I hadn't heard about, and I took them all very personally. And once I got out of the trenches, so to speak, that first year when it's really hard, and started speaking with other mothers, I realized that it's so universal, but also the fact that we don't talk about it and we don't know about it is also universal. And like we said, I don't want anyone to go through what I went through or feel the things that I felt. So the book is brutally honest. It really is. It's everything. I mean, I have chapters that include how your friendships might fall apart, back to your relationship, how I, for a while, was convinced I was going to have to divorce my husband because
me too.
It's true. I thought parenthood just was the end for us. And again, none of my friends told me they went through that. And it's really just important to me to just put it all out there. And it's not to scare anyone and not to be dramatic, but it's true. Everything in there is true. And it's not just my story. It's hearing from other moms as well and experts. And I think that the more we know, the better prepared we are. But then also we don't have those voices in our head telling us it's just you or you're doing something wrong. It was just really something I wanted to put out there for others.
Yeah, the really interesting thing for me as well is that you say when you're out the trenches in the first year, couldn't agree more. The first year is wild.
Yeah.
actually, what I thought was, I kind of knew the first year was going to be wild. I didn't know how many times I was going to lock myself in the bathroom and refuse to come out. I didn't know how often I was going to sit and think, well, if, you know, if I do leave him, then I could move here and Amber could split her time, like to the detail. I didn't realize those details. But equally, actually, for me, I returned to work after 10 months of being out. I wasn't out the trenches. That first year back at work was eye-opening for me. And I don't know if anyone could have told me how hard it was. And I don't know how personal those circumstances were for me. And, you know, actually, ostensibly, work made it really easy for me. They made it really easy. They're very kind. They're very understanding. You know, I work at a workplace that you would assume and correctly assume is set up for women who work, right?
Yeah.
Stylist, it's excellent. I still found it hard. So then how on earth do women who don't work at such an accepting place understand their mental health and go about talking to other people at work, their colleagues, their co-workers, their bosses, their friends, about how they're feeling without that being a huge taboo still?
Correct.
Is really where I get to. It's difficult. In your research for the book, did you come across returning to work as being a difficult spot?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, here in the United States, it's about 12 weeks that you get off work. So that's 3 months. I can't imagine. I worked from home. And what's interesting, I didn't stop working. And that was very naive of me. I thought, well, I'm writing for parenting websites. And they were, as with your case, they were very understanding. But I was still broken. My body was bleeding. I was recovering. I had engorged breasts. And here I was trying to meet deadlines. The benefit was we'd be on conference calls and, you know, I'd be pumping and everybody would understand that. But again, you know, here in the States, there's a lot of women who are going back to work at 12 weeks and they're going to an environment that doesn't support them. And it's all those things we talked about, the fear of their child missing out of work. There's also a lot of fear here for women about losing their jobs if they feel that that balance maybe shifts too much and motherhood seems to take over or appears to take over at the workplace, they worry about losing their job. So that's just yet another reason that we file away and hide this need of our own and what we need and mental health help and time off, or just knowing that you can go to your boss and say, I need to leave early and that it's not going to affect your employment.
And in so many cases, it would.
Yeah.
I think is the point actually, is that in so many cases, and be that a woman or a man, actually, you know, if you say, oh, I need to go and pick my kids up or it's sports day. Well, there's a mark against your name.
Yes.
You know, and that's hard. How do you get around that? You can't.
Because
that is going to affect your mental health because exactly. Yeah. And the guilt, it's not just the guilt. When we talk about mental health, I feel like guilt is joked about a lot. Oh, mum guilt. It's not funny. No. Like it's crippling. But there's also the mental load, which can often be unintended. You know, you could have the best, most equal relationship, but the mental load still falls to you because the nursery still calls you first.
Right.
And your child will probably still call for you first as well. So there's that. Then there's the lack of sleep because, you know, you're likely to be the one waking up thinking about whether you've washed X, Y, or Z or they're awake. Amber woke up last night at 3 a.m. shouting because she'd had a nightmare. She'd lost her hair clip. And so it's me that's getting up with her going, hair clip!
Yes.
And not Aaron. And that's fine, but also not fine. It makes me want to roll him out the window.
Right.
There are just so many parts of mental health that are just the consideration when you go back to work and need to be able to concentrate or be creative or be any sort of logical, it's just wild.
Yes, it's almost like we're expected to turn off this part, this huge part of who we are, which is being mothers. And you go into an environment and it's not that they don't care, but they don't care that you were up with a child having a nightmare, or, you know, you were running late because someone didn't like their socks. And it's just, you know, there's not a lot of places that are receptive to women bringing that in. And a lot of women also expressed to me their concern about just how their coworkers were going to perceive them. Mm. It's really easy to stay and go to happy hours and group events and social things with your coworkers before you have a child. But once you do, we all know it's important that you leave at a certain time, that you're home, that you're picking up, that you're meeting daycare deadlines. And a lot of women felt that they were then being socially ostracized because they couldn't be that person anymore. And that's another huge part. We spend so much time at work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually see a lot of myself in what you've just said. I am, in my team, the first one to have had a baby. My team are a bit younger than I am, or in different life stages to where I'm at. And so going back, they were all so welcoming and so kind, but I ostracized myself because I knew I've got a commute now as well. So like I knew I couldn't go out after work for very long. And if I did, I actually drive to the train station. So I'm not going to go out and get boozy. It's not like when 10 years ago on a Tuesday, someone would be like, should we go to the pub? Like, yeah. And I'm drinking pints on a street corner. Like I can't do that anymore. So how do I relate? How am I still going to be involved in relating to these people and have work friendships? That's really important to me, actually. I'm not asking to be your best friend, but I would really like to have some friends at work, because doesn't that make work nicer?
Absolutely. I mean, studies show that we're happier in the workplace when we can identify someone as a work best friend. So it's necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
And it's hard also, though, when you become a mom and I think it's universal. You're consumed by that. I was. Yeah. I certainly was. And I certainly was at 3 months, and I was at 10 months when you went back to work, and going and working somewhere where you have colleagues maybe who aren't parents. You can almost feel yourself. It's like being the oldest person in a conversation and speaking about a band that no one knows about. You get these So you're consumed with motherhood, but no one else, you know, you've had this monumental shift in your life and no one else at your workplace has, and it's not that big of a deal to them. So sometimes it's about finding that something to relate, somewhere where you can connect. And again, like you said, all of these things are, again, just slices of this pie of this mental health that people might not even think of. But having a constant fear that you might lose your job because you're a mother, that's another thing. That's it just all adds up.
It's the always on as well for me as well, actually. Like the thinking that you might lose your job, for me, that's because I needed to, Amber had chickenpox, then she had croup, then she had some kind of horrendous diarrhea.
Right.
And suddenly she's out of nursery for 3 weeks and, you know, you split it, but that's still horrendous for you at the drop of a hat. And then you're trying to prove yourself afterwards. So yes, I know I've been away for, oh my God, like 2 weeks because my child was sick, but I am actually really good. So I'm going to stay. I'm going to work really hard. But what you don't know is that I only had 2 hours sleep last night, and I'm really forcing, I've slapped a load of fake tan on and a load of bronzer, and I'm trying to make it look like I am not crumbling, but I'm exhausted and I've just had a cry in the toilet.
Yes. Inside you're breaking down. And that's another excellent point. And again, here, I feel that in the United States, our system is really not set up to help mothers or to sustain motherhood. Again, we have that general 12-week window where you're back at work, but also vacation time, sick time, there's no consideration for working parents. So if your child is home sick from daycare, you're using your sick time, you're using your vacation time. And when that runs out, you're not getting paid. And a lot of people can't afford that.
I mean, that's the same in the UK, unless you are somewhere that is really empathizing with being a parent. Yeah, you're using your holiday or your own sick days, but more often than not, it's your holiday at the drop of a hat. And unplanned, that doesn't go well in many businesses. No. You know, you can plan for holiday cover, but unplanned, sorry, suddenly some spots have come up overnight and it's hand, foot and mouth. Well, that's not helpful to anyone, is it?
No.
I mean, yeah. The only benefit now is that since the pandemic, working from home, I assume, has helped some people with some of that load. But then also, talking of mental health, working from home has been absolutely wonderful for mothers, but also you can work from home whenever now. So what, do you log back on after the baby's asleep?
Right.
Awful. There's no boundary. There's no cutoff. If you're trying to suddenly prove yourself because you feel like you've been less than your excellent self, there's now an opportunity for you to do that at every time, every single point on the clock.
And I think when you're at home, you're at home. So even though I'll be working or doing something, I'm also, the kitchen is calling me with the dishes or, you know, the dog needs to go for a walk. And when you're elsewhere, when you're out of the house, obviously that's not an option to do that.
Yeah.
But when you're working from home, it's everything again is on you. And as the mother, like you talked about that mental load, my husband certainly does his share of things, but yet I still feel like it's all on me.
No, I agree. I think it's about time we brought in our guest for the episode. Zoe Blasky is a qualified transformational coach on a mission to share proven tools and ideas to help mothers feel less alone and more resilient, empowered, fulfilled, and confident through sold-out Motherkind coaching programs and her chart-topping podcast. Zoe, you've been listening to Becky and I talk. Do you think our experiences are common for women returning to work?
Yes. Everything that you've talked about, sadly, is incredibly common. And you know, just sat here listening to you, you know, I think the thing that I just really wish that more mothers could access is that self-compassion, is knowing it's not you, it's the system. You are not broken. The system is. We are not working in organizations, in societies, in structures that are helping us to thrive. Because what I see, and both of you said it actually at the start, I thought I was doing it wrong. I thought I was broken. I thought I was a bad mum. That tends to be, and it is gendered, it tends to be where women go to. We tend to think that it's us. And then, of course, we try and compensate for that through all the things that you were talking about, Fliss, overworking, burning out, and just getting exhausted.
The fun stuff.
The fun stuff. So, you know, it's not as simple as, you know, self-compassion won't solve many of the structural challenges, of course, but it can help us to just give ourselves a bit of a break, just to realize there's a lot here that I can't control, but there are some things that I can, and that is a really, really, really useful tool to start to think about, right, what is outside my control? I can't control the length of, you know, maternity leave in my country. I can't control the fact that I'm the only person in my team that's had a baby. I can't do anything about any of that. But what can I do to make myself feel more resilient around those challenges? And I think, I just think this, you know, the structure is so challenging. And this is, I think the other thing is so important for us to remember is that this is only a couple of generations old.
Right.
Yeah. We are guinea pigs in this.
Yes.
There are more mothers working today than at any point in history. And that, I mean, paid work. Of course, we've been doing unpaid work for, you know, but there are more mothers in paid work than at any other point in history. And so I think we really have to remember that we, none of us know what we're doing. Mm. We're all experimenting. We're all trying to figure out how on earth you do this. And I think, you know, the structures in the workplace have changed so much. That's incredible. But the structures around that haven't caught up quick enough. Yeah. So we do find ourselves in these situations where we are trying to forge forward with our careers. We've been told we can have it all. We're also picking up the majority of the mental load, the emotional load, the invisible labor. So we really are in this sort of perfect storm. So I would say, if you're finding it hard, like, there is nothing wrong with you. It's because it is really, really hard. And I genuinely think we will look back, hopefully, you know, if you fast forward 100 years, 200 years, I think we'll look back at this time and think, what the hell?
Yeah. Right.
What were we doing to those women who were working? You know, the average mum works 98 hours a week. That's 2.5 full-time jobs. That's what we're doing, paid and unpaid work. We start on average at 6:23 a.m. That's right. If you're lucky, right? If you haven't got 5 a.m. riser. And we finish on average at 8:32 p.m.
Yeah.
Again, if you're lucky, that's not if you're logging back on. So reality is many mums might be doing more than that. That is 2.5 full-time jobs. It's mind-blowing. So if you're feeling burnout and you're feeling frazzled and you're feeling like your nervous system is, you know, dysregulated, you said that, Fliss, one little thing will flip you over the edge. Yeah. That's dysregulation. That's why. It's not because you're doing anything wrong or you're broken or you're not cut out for this. It's because we're in a really tricky time. But, you know, what I'm so passionate about is there are things that we can do. Mm. There definitely are. But we can't change the system that we're working in yet.
Raising a child and staying in work is a real balancing act. But raising a child with special educational needs and staying in work can feel like enough to tip you over the edge. I'm Lisa Miller, journalist and mother to a daughter with a rare genetic syndrome. I'd like to invite you to the Sen Mums Career Club, a new podcast where each episode I speak to a different guest who has their own unique journey navigating a career alongside special needs parenting. We discuss the triumphs, tribulations, and things we've learned along the way. Listen to the Sen Mums Career Club from DC Thompson, available on all your major podcasting platforms.
What would you say is the biggest concern from the women that you work with? What are they coming to you with?
It's really hard. I thought about this question. Yeah. There's not one thing that I could say because what we know about motherhood and going back to work is that it impacts every single area of your life. There's not another change that I can think of, a big change in life that impacts every single thing in the way motherhood does. And I'm really passionate about talking about this word matrescence, because when we talk about this word matrescence, what it really encapsulates is that it impacts everything. It also encapsulates and talks to, and this word matrescence is the same as adolescence. When we go from a teen into an adult, we know that people are going to question their identity. Their friendships are going to change. Their values are going to change. Who they are is going to change. They're going to try and figure out who the hell am I now? It's exactly the same when we become mums. Everything changes. Think about it. You know, Becky, you were talking about your relationship.
Yeah.
I had exactly the same experience. Your relationships change. Your friendships change. Your bodies change.
Right.
Your brain changes. Your hormone changes. Your work changes. Where you live might change. Yeah. Everything changes. And I think the more that we can use that word to normalize that, because so many mums, like, this is why I started the work that I do now, because I was like, no one talked about this.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So I thought I was doing it wrong. I thought I was failing. Whereas actually, in matrescence, it is completely normal to question everything. It's completely normal to not know what's important to you anymore, because you've put this beautiful, gorgeous little bomb in the middle of your life, which has changed everything else around it. And if we don't support women with that, which we don't tend to, that's when we turn in on ourselves. And that's what we have to change.
Do you know what threw me off a little bit? Also, I just want to add, I have never heard matrescence described like adolescence. And
I've
always kind of, I've never really engaged with it. And it's like a light switch.
I was thinking the same thing.
I don't know what you've just done to me, but I have never heard it described so clearly and with such clarity. So thank you, because I feel like that actually might change my life. I don't know. Are we 10 minutes in? I don't know what you've done, but you've done something to me.
Well, Fliss, let me tell you, the first time I heard that word, that it did that for me.
It's
exactly the same.
So I've heard the word before, but just never described in that way. It's the way you described it, the words you used, that I'm sat here. And Becky and I are both nodding.
Yes.
Like this. And actually, both of us got pens out and wrote it down.
I want to hang it on the wall. I think things like that are so important, because it's almost like we need permission to feel the things we're feeling. We need someone on the outside to say, it's okay. And I think that that's a wonderful thing you give us with that.
Yeah, 100%. For what threw me off, actually, thinking back about my experience with mental health was, and I wonder if this is my issue, I thought that's what the fourth trimester was. So I thought the fourth trimester is me sorting my shit out. It's just, you get an extra 3 months, and after that, you're going to pop out and you're going to be that mum who knows what they're doing, who's got their shit together. It's fine. It's not. No. It's taken me 2 years. And I'm only just feeling good about it now.
Yeah, well, there's a really pioneering doctor, Australian doctor, called Dr. Oscar Serelak, and he coined this term called postnatal depletion, which is essentially a lot of what we're talking to, this idea of trying to figure out emotionally and practically, and how do we care for ourselves when we're also caring for all these other things. And he says that that will last up to 10 years.
I believe it.
And I think, again, when we change the timelines on something, we give ourselves so much more compassion and understanding. If we give ourselves 3 months, and Fliss, I did exactly the same. This will make you laugh. This was before I was doing Motherkind. I wrote myself a list of goals for my maternity leave.
Love it.
And my first one was settle into motherhood. And I gave myself 4 weeks to do that. Isn't that insane?
I love that.
But that is what I thought.
You pull the list out and you need a laugh now, when you need to cheer yourself up.
Oh my
up.
Gosh. But doesn't that just show the narrative that I had absorbed and we had absorbed over our lifetimes, from media, from films, from of how long that took?
Yeah.
We all get these ideas. We don't pluck these ideas from nowhere. Mm. They come from societal messages. And because I'd watched those films where the woman has the baby and then she's glamorous the next day.
Or even during, she pops it out and she's got her eyelashes on.
Exactly. I was like, that feels reasonable, about a month. So when we change our horizon to, Zoe, it's going to take you 10 years to fully feel, you know, all the ways that you might want to feel about this, that changing that horizon is a really, really powerful thing to do, because it gives you space and it gives you a bit more compassion. I mean, we then hit the menopause, but let's not go there.
I was just going to say, if this is 10 years, this is why I keep coming back to, in this series, I feel like every episode I bring up the fact that, why is this a women's issue? But if it's 10 years of our lives, and this is 10 solid years. This is probably in our 30s at some point, could dip into your 40s, could dip into your 20s. This is a really peak part of a woman's life. Why does no one talk about it? It should be viewed like perimenopause. Now, that is less taboo than it has ever been now, and there is still work going on to make it even less taboo. Mental health in the general round, thank God people are talking about it more. Maternal mental health, not so much. Like, you hear about like postpartum psychosis, and the narrative around that is still, oh, a mum went mad.
Crazy.
Well, no, the hormones in her body. Exactly. Yeah. There's so many awful adjectives that come with that, because the hormones in your body have gone nuts. Like, it's not you. Mm-hmm. It's everything.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, that's what I'm on an absolute mission to do is with my platform and the work that I do is to make it, in the same way that menopause and perimenopause has had this just incredible, I absolutely love it. We absolutely need to do the same thing for those first 5 years, certainly if not 10 years of motherhood. Because, you know, and I think, you know, there's many reasons why we don't we don't talk about it. And I think one of them is that we are coming off this sort of cultural messaging of you are not allowed to say anything negative about motherhood because it right. makes you ungrateful. Yeah. And that just talks to how binary some of the messages have been around the cultural messages. We've forgotten that you're allowed this magical three-letter word called and. You can absolutely love your children. I adore my girls. And motherhood is really, really hard. Mm. And I think, you know, it was only in the 70s where a book called A Mother's Work was written and the author talked to this and she got absolutely, cancelled right. would be the word yeah. that we would use in art. Because people were like, you cannot say anything negative about motherhood. And we've come a long way from that, but we've still got so far to go. But if you think that was in the 70s and she got, you know, death threats
wow. yeah.
for saying wow. that she found motherhood hard.
And what about social media? So I just, you know, talking about this, the concept and these expectations, and we talked about the media or television, seeing these women giving birth, and I hate this term, bouncing back. Social media, what do you think about that? I mean, how much has that added to that? And what is that doing to the postpartum woman's mental health?
Yeah, I think social media is another and. It's incredible. And we have to treat it really carefully. So I commissioned a study a couple of years ago to really understand this. And what came out was that in the first year of motherhood, mothers are spending on average of 4 hours extra online. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't surprise me because often you're at home, you can't get out, but it's how we're using that 4 hours. And it's the majority of it is social media. And I think that's where we have to take our control back and be really discerning. But it is so hard because when you're vulnerable, you can tell yourself, and I tell myself this when I open Instagram, it's just a highlight reel. I'm not going to compare my insides, how I feel, to what other people are presenting on the outside. I'm not going to do that. I know all the theory. I still find myself comparing. I still find myself getting off that scroll feeling less than, because it's going straight to our subconscious. And that is the way that social media works. And that's the way that our brains work. Okay, so there's a filter in our brain, which essentially is hard for us to filter some of those comparative messages out. We're also actually, as a species, designed to compare. We can't help it. We are wired that way. So I think it's really important that we have to see it as a really exciting place where we can connect. Mm. And we probably wouldn't be chatting today if it wasn't for social media, which is incredible. And we have to treat it with a real reverence and respect because I think it absolutely plays into that sense of not feeling good enough, particularly when we're really vulnerable. I don't know if you find this. If I'm feeling good, I love social media. I can find real connection and confidence in it. If I'm feeling low confidence or I don't know what I'm doing or I'm having a down day, it's honestly one of the worst places that I can go to.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I have two accounts. So I have a very private, locked, personal account that was just always my account. And then about 10 years ago, I created like a work right. account that was open just so it was my profile. And I rarely go on that. I will not look at it. I will look at it during work time. And I've never like looked it directly in the eye, but it makes me feel shit.
Yeah.
That's when I get the heart palpitations and this like very gut feeling that I hate. Whereas my personal one is just like, oh, it's my yeah. schoolmates and it's yeah. my mum. And there's nothing, I don't feel like I'm in a space where I'm being compared to anything or like I'm not doing the right thing. It's my issue, but I feel like I've taken a step back or a step away, especially returning to work actually. That was really hard. So I really did disconnect with Instagram specifically when I came back to work last year, because journalism is a wonderful industry. That means there are a lot of events, there are a lot of parties, yes. there are a lot of really nice perks to the job. And my cohort, my colleagues, my ex-colleagues, my friends that I've worked with are all going to festivals and nice dinners in the evening, just lovely things that I'm really pleased for them, but I can't look at it. Yeah. I can't look at it because that used to be me and that's what I gave up. And I knew I was giving it up, but it's not easy. It's really not easy.
Yeah, I think that just sounds like a really smart move. And it's not forever. That's the other thing, is that so much of this is fluid. Yeah. And it may be in, you know, however many years, when you have added in a few more of those, you've peppered in a few of those a month, you know, you might feel differently about it. But you've got to pay attention to how something makes you feel. That's self-respect. If something makes you feel bad, disengage. It's like, if it hurts, look away. We don't need to stare at it and hurt ourselves. We don't need to do that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Talk to me about these values then, because I don't know what you're on about, and I would love to do my own values.
Values are essentially the things that are really important to us in our lives, and they can change over time. So they definitely change, but they're core to, if you took those things away, you would start to feel like something was really missing. So for me, one of my top values is curiosity and learning. Like, and if someone said to me, you can never read a book or listen to a podcast ever again, honestly, I think I might die. Like, it's just my thing. Like, I just love learning and I love curiosity. So when we know what our values are, particularly as mothers and as returners and working mothers, then we can start to think, okay, so if my top value is Fliss, maybe one of your top values is connection and freedom. How can I start to bring a little sense of those in? And it won't be how it was before, because that's not matrescence. Matrescence is, remember, everything's changing. So what does freedom mean to me now? What does freedom mean within the current constraints that I'm in? I was working with a client once, and she, before motherhood, was like, she would just be that sort of person who'd show up at the airport, and adventure was her top value, and she just loved it. And she said, I'm getting no adventure. And she felt really off. And so I worked with her for a bit about this idea of venture, and how could you bring it in within the constraints of three kids and a full-time job. And she talked about doing like these sort of little micro adventures in, you know, taking a couple of hours out and going to an area that she'd never been before, or even in smaller ways, like just taking a completely different route home from the ski run. Do you know what I mean? And she said, I cannot believe, she said, I thought this was just a load of rubbish and it wasn't going to work. She said, I cannot believe how different I feel. Because this is what we need to do. We need to take what's important to us and think about, what does it look like now? That's the essence of matrescence and going through this change. It's like, how do I still continue to be me within all the constraints that I've got of these responsibilities and the mental load and everything else going on?
I love that.
So yeah, thinking about your values is really, really powerful. I always do it. To be fair, any good coach would start there. And it's just really powerful when you know that, because then you can start to use it to prioritize as well. So one of the, we know this, don't we? Motherhood is essentially an exercise in prioritization, I think. You know, like what, because before we could pull an all-nighter. I would be that person. I was quite a people pleaser. I'd say yes to three parties in a night, and it wouldn't impact anyone but me. I'd just, you know, dart around, and can't do any of that in motherhood, because it's not possible often logistically, and it will break you. So it's thinking, okay, how am I going to prioritize my life? And I think there's lots of conversation about that, but not really how do I do it? How do I let go of these things? Everything feels important to me. And I think values is one of the ways that you can do that.
How do you help women apply that to going back to work? If you have someone who says, you know, I value my career, or I value different aspects, how can they make that work with motherhood?
Yeah. And I think it's a really good point, because, you know, when we go back to work, what I wish workplaces knew, and I do a lot of work with workplaces talking about this, particularly for line managers, maybe let's just gender it, male line managers who aren't parents yet, you know, welcoming a mother or a father back. It's so important to remember that that is not the same person that walked in is not is not the same person that walked out. Their values are different. And good management, good leadership is about understanding what makes this person tick. What is going to make this person motivated and productive and creative? And that is understanding about what's important to them now. But I always say that returners can take the lead on that. Mm. You know, I work with clients and I'll say, pop an hour in the diary with your line manager and talk to them about your priorities and about what's important to you now. And there was an incredible study that Ernst & Young did, and it'll be unsurprising to us, but it surprised the world, which is that the most productive workers across the board were part-time mothers. Mm-hmm. Now, that's completely unsurprising to us because we go in there, we can get work done. We are unbelievably productive because we bring so much focus. So we don't say any of this apologetically. It's almost like, give me what our top priorities are this quarter and I will absolutely relentlessly focus on that. But then you have to get really good at boundaries. Then you have to get really good at saying no to the random project that swipes in from another department that is not on that list. Then you have to get really good at saying no to that overseas trip, which even though it would be lovely, is not contributing to those three things that you said you would deliver this quarter. So we have to get really good at knowing what our, you know, knowing what our values are when we go back, what's important to us, but also on boundaries. And I think I'd heard the phrase boundaries before motherhood and before working motherhood, but I never really knew how to use them. But since I've started using them, it is transformational what using boundaries will give you. And I always talk about, you know, this idea of work-life balance is just, I just wish we could erase it from the vocabulary because it doesn't exist. It makes us feel bad that we're failing, that we haven't got it. No one has it. It doesn't exist. So if we replace work-life balance with work-life boundaries, then we're getting somewhere. Because it's like, what are my boundaries at work? What are my boundaries at home? And they're going to change. One, you might have a boundary, I'm going to stay late in the office till 9 p.m. once a week. Okay, what do I need to do to set up childcare around that? Or I'm only going to work after 9 p.m. once a week. Or I'm going to do 2 nursery drop-offs. That's my boundary. Or I'm going to not be available after 4 p.m. for team meetings. But you have to get those boundaries out. Lots of women I know just sort of hold them in their head and then get resentful when other people don't apply. It's like you have to get them out. You have to communicate them. And then you have to hold them, which is the real work of boundary setting. But these are all skills of leaders. This is what leaders do, right? You don't see CEOs of big organizations running around doing everything for everyone. They are typically very intentional with their time. Mm. And that's what motherhood gives us, is this real ability to, I think, step into more of that, being super boundaried, being really intentional with our time and owning the fact that we are incredibly productive as opposed to being apologetic, which is what I see so many mothers doing as well. Did that answer your question, Becky, about how you would take that into work?
No, it did. And you know, that simple shift, I think, just even hearing it myself from balance to boundaries.
Yeah.
It's kind of, that I can do.
But what does it even mean? It's ridiculous. I don't know why we say it.
I have no idea. But it's just these ideas that are thrown at us that we're supposed to somehow make work, right? Like find your village, there's no village, you know, work-life balance. No. But I love that. I love that term with the boundaries. And I do think as a mother, since I've become a mother, I lead by apologizing. I'm sorry, I can't do this or be everywhere. And I think that's a powerful shift.
Do you know what, Becky? Actually, saying that, I must have read or seen something somewhere. And I find myself doing this now. I lead with apologies as well. And actually, now I read my emails back and I delete it and I say thank you instead. So rather than writing, I'm so sorry, this is late. Every email I send now is, I'm so sorry this is late, because also I don't work on a Friday. So if someone emails me Thursday evening, it could be Monday. Whereas now I say, well, thank you so much for bearing with me.
Yes.
And it's like, it has changed the way I step into things, because you're already coming in with a powerful statement rather than like a shrouded apology. Yeah, I'm really, really grateful you could bear with me. Thank you. Let's get on with it.
Yes, I read about that too. And there's actually a list. I think I've seen it go around on social media, but it is replace I'm sorry with thank you. And it is. It really makes you feel like you have more control of the situation, that you're not starting from this point of defense. Thank you for understanding that I'm a few minutes late because my child couldn't find a hair clip. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for respecting my
100%.
Time.
100%. For me, it's also not giving the detail. Yeah. I am such a big detail giver because I share everything. I'm a very open, I'm very secretive about some things, but I'm an open book mostly because I like to be transparent. I think that's how I connect with people. And so I would often go, oh God, I'm so sorry. I had an awful night with Amber. She was up doing this and then she did this and this and this. Now I'm like, sorry, like, thank you so much for bearing with me.
Yeah.
Let's crack on. And it's like taking that power, isn't it? And actually what you said about understanding your own values, that's on you. And that doesn't feel like a weight, actually. That feels very empowering. And if I could have applied that to myself last year when I went back to work, I would have come at it in a different way. I definitely, Zoe, came back to work believing I was the same person, or at least I had to be. In fact, you know what? I didn't even give it any thought. I put on my old clothes. I put on my old clothes and I went in with the same rucksack that I've always had, with the laptop that I always had. And I was Fliss, who at Stylist from 2019, 2022. Yeah, do you know what? I've got a baby, but nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. And actually, how nice it would have been to embrace, yeah, I'm slightly different, but that's good. It's growth.
Yep. And it's so powerful, you see, because when we can be trailblazers in that way and own that and talk about, you know, this is what's changed for me. This is how my values have changed. Imagine speaking through that with your team, because you're also paving the way for, you know, people that look up to us, people that respect us, younger generations, other people who may never become parents, but actually having heard you approach it that way might think, oh, okay, well, I might talk to my sister. That's how change happens, as opposed to this sort of it's a cultural thing that we are supposed to bounce back, that we're supposed to just be exactly the same person, like nothing's changed, but we have a baby now. And I think the more that we can work together, the more that we normalize it, and it is an incredible thing, you know, the brain changes that you go through when you become a mother. You know, we talked about the productivity at work, how much you step into your leadership role is all to be celebrated. So I think it's just breaking that cultural message that so many of us grew up with, that we have to just pretend that it's not, pretend that it's not happening. And of course it's easier if you're in an organization that is more welcoming. Of course it's easier. But in any organization, there's normally one or two allies. There really is. And find those, start a network together, you know, and that network might be a coffee once a week, and talk to these challenges, because if you know that you're not alone in them, that's, I think, the most powerful thing. If you know that other people are experiencing exactly the same thing.
Definitely.
Yeah, in every aspect of motherhood, really.
Yeah.
That everything. Commonality. I love that.
Knowing this word matrescence, that is so important. Knowing that you're not the same person you're not supposed to be, and that is an incredible thing. And taking the space when you return to think about, okay, how am I going to manage this? Thinking about boundaries, not balance. Mm-hmm. Thinking about your change in values, and thinking about what's in my control, what's out my control. Mm-hmm. Those are like really fundamental tools that I've used with clients. And honestly, it still blows my mind how much it changes their experience. Yeah. It really does.
Becky, I have never had a chat that has made me feel so much like something has changed in my brain. And for me, obviously, the key takeaway is going to be matrescence, which is a word that I can barely say, let alone understand. I know I've read the word before. I know people have said the word to me before, but the way Zoe described it has genuinely changed some kind of chemical in my brain. And of course it's like adolescence. I just can't believe I've never connected those two things before. In adolescence, you forgive. I mean, this is a very British British thing to say, but I always think about Kevin and Perry, which you might not know, but it's two characters and they are like the epitome of teenagers, and they have mood swings and they're grumpy and they're kind of argumentative and they're secretive. And we all laugh about it because they've nailed it so much. And actually, Maitrescence is being nailed in the media in some ways. You've got Motherland, which is an incredible Sharon Horgan comedy. You've got Working Mums. You've got so many things that are starting to nail it. But actually, I don't know. I just feel like it might have changed the way I view everything. And I'm regretful that I didn't know about it last year, but I'm excited to tell everyone about it. It sort of feels like something that I'm going to instantly text every mum WhatsApp group I've got. And there are at least three.
It's powerful. It's powerful.
Yeah, it is powerful, isn't it? What was your key takeaway?
Well, I loved this chat. As you just said, I feel like things are just popping off in my brain and I want to share so much of it. But I really loved the shift from a work-life balance to work-life boundaries. I felt that was something that it's just a small thing, but something I could control, something I could start doing right now. Mm. And it really opened up, I feel like, a way to even give myself some forgiveness that I can't do it all and I don't need to try to do it all. I need to do what's best for me and my family.
Yeah. Compassion. It's compassion for yourself, isn't it? There's been so much. It's been such a big conversation about all aspects of mental health. We've touched on burnout and jealousy and our deepest, darkest feelings. So a special thank you to you, Becky, as my co-host, and our guest Zoe, who was just invaluable in many ways. Next week, I'm joined by Toby Asari and our guest Davinia Tomlinson to talk all about money. You can tweet us at Stylist Magazine, find us on Instagram and use the hashtag #StylistBabyOnTheBrain. Remember to subscribe, share and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, which will help other mums returning to work looking for podcasts like this find us more easily.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.